Madam President and friends. I do not think that I should apologize to you for having to speak in a foreign tongue. I wonder if this loudspeaker carries my voice to the farthest end of this vast audience. Will some of those who are far away will raise their hands if they listen to what I'm saying? Do you listen? All right. Well, if my voice doesn't carry, it won't be my fault. It will be the fault of the loudspeaker. But I was going to tell you that I don't need to apologize. I dare not, if all the delegates who have assembled from the various parts of Asia and observers, I learned the word from the lips of an American friend. He said, I'm no delegate, I am an observer. Thinking that he hailed from Persia, from my very few moments, I promised that he would. Lo and behold, an American stands in front of me, and I told him, I dread you, and I wish you would leave me alone. Do you imagine that an American would leave me alone? Not he. And therefore, I had to speak to him. But I was going to tell you that my provincial speech, which is my mother tongue, you can't understand, and I don't want to insult you by insisting on the provincial speech. The national speech, Hindustan. I know that it will be a long time before it can rival an international speech. If there is rivalry, there is rivalry between French and English. For international commerce, undoubtedly, English occupies the first place. For the diplomatic speech and correspondence, I used to hear when I was studying in my boyhood that French was the language of diplomacy. And if you wanted to go from one end of Europe to the other end, you must try to pick up French. And so I tried to pick up a few words of French in order that I might be able to make myself understood. Anyway, if there is any rivalry at all, the rivalry lies between French and English. Therefore, having been taught English naturally, I have to resort to speaking to you to that international speech. I was wondering what I was to speak to you. I wanted to collect my thoughts, but let me confess to you that I have no time, and yet I have promised yesterday that I will try to say a few words to you. Whilst I was coming with Bhasha Khan, I asked for a little piece of paper and pencil. I got a pen instead of a pencil. I tried to scribble a few words. You will be sorry to hear from me that piece of paper is not by my side. But that is nothing. I remembered what I wanted to think out. And I said to myself, you friends have seen not the real India. And you are not meeting in conference in the midst of real India. Delhi, Bombay, Madras, Calcutta, Lahore, all these are big cities. And therefore, having come under the influence of the West, having been veiled also, many perhaps accepted, having been, but not moving, having been made also by the English. I then thought of a little issue, I suppose I should call it, which was in French, and it was translated for me by an animal French friend. And he was a philosopher. He was also an unselfish man. And he said he befriended me without my having known him, because he always sided with the minority. And I was, that is my countrymen, in a hopeless minority. Not only hopeless minority, but a despised minority. If the Europeans of South Africa will forgive me for saying so. We were all coolies. I was an insignificant coolie lawyer. At that time, we had no coolie doctors. We had no coolie lawyers. I was the first in the field. Nevertheless, a coolie. You know perhaps what is meant by the word coolie. But this friend, his name was Scott. His mother was a Frenchwoman. His father was an Englishman. And he said, I want to translate for you a French story. You will pardon me, those of you who know this story, if I make mistakes in recording it here and there, but there will be no mistake in the main incident. There were three scientists, and they, of course, it is an imaginary story, three scientists went out from France, went out of Europe in search of truth. That was the first lesson that story taught me, that if truth was to be searched, it was not to be found on the side of Europe. Therefore, undoubtedly not in America. These three great scientists went to different parts of Asia. One of them found his way to India, and he began his search. He went to the so-called cities of those times. Naturally, this was before British occupation. Before even the Mughal period, that is how the French author has illustrated this story. But still, he went through the cities, he saw the so-called high-caste people, men and women. Till his last, he penetrated a humble cottage in a humble village, and that cottage was a Bhangi cottage. And he found the truth that he was in search of in that Bhangi cottage, in the Bhangi family. Man, woman, perhaps two or three children. I speak here under correction. And then he describes how he found it. I omit all that here. I want to connect that story with what I want to say to you, that if you really want to see India at its best, you have to find it in a Bhangi cottage, in a humble Bhangi home. Of such villages, so the English historians teach us, are 700,000. A few cities here and there, they don't hold several crores of people, but the 700,000 villages do hold nearly 40 crores of people. I say nearly because you may take away 1 crore perhaps. We leave 2 crores in the cities till there will be 38 crores. And then I said to myself, if these friends go away without finding their true India, what will they have found? I then thought that I would beseech you to imagine this India, not from this vast audience, but to imagine what it would be like. Say, I would like you to read a story such as this brilliant story of Krishna or Kanyakis. See, perhaps some of you, a few villages of India, then you will find real India. Today, I will make this admission also that you will not be facilitating this. You will have then to scratch down below the dung heaps that the British are today. I don't pretend to say that there were ever places of paradise, but today they are really dung heaps. They were not like that before, of that I'm quite sure. But that I speak not from history, but from what I have seen myself with my physical eyes of India, and I have traveled from one India or end of India to the other, seeing these villages, seeing the miserable specialness of humanity, lustreless eyes, and yet they are India. And yet in those humble cottages, in the midst of those dung heaps, are to become the humble bhangis, where you will find concentrated essence of wisdom. How? That is a great question. Well, then, I want to take you to another standard. Again, I have learned from books written by English historians, translated for me, all this knowledge, I'm sorry to say, comes to us here in India through English books, through English historians. Not that there are not Indian historians, but they also don't write in their Marathon or in the national language Hindustani, or if you prefer to call them, two speeches, Hindi and Urdu, two forms of the same speech. No, they give us what they have studied through English books, then perhaps through originals, but through English, in the English tongue. That is the cultural conquest of India, that India has, through which India has undergone. But they tell us that wisdom came to the West from the East. And who are these wise men? Zoroaster. He belonged to the East. He was followed by Buddha. He belonged to the East. He belonged to India. Who followed Buddha? Jesus. Again from Asia. Before Jesus was Musa, Moses, also belonging to Palestine, though born, I was just taking my ship to Basha Khan and Jerusalem. And they both corroborated me that Moses belonged to Palestine, though he was born in Egypt. And then came Jesus. Then came Muhammad. All these, I omit Krishna, I omit Mahabir, I omit the other life, I won't call them lesser life, but unknown to the West, unknown to the literary world. All the same, I don't know a single person to match these men of Asia. And then what happened? Christianity became disfigured when it went to the West. I'm sorry to have to say that, but that is my view. I won't take you any further through this. I think give you this story in order to hearten and in order to make you understand, if my poor speech can make you understand, that what you see of this splendor and everything that the cities of India has to show you is not real India. Certainly, the carnage that is going on before your very eyes, sorry, shameful. As I said yesterday, you have to bury it here. Don't carry the memory of the carnage beyond the confines of India. But what I want you to understand, if you can, that the message of the Isha, the message of Asia, Asia is not to be governed through European spectacles, through the Western spectacles, not by imitating the essential observation, the gunpowder observation, the atom bomb observation. If you want to give a message again to the West, it must be a message of love. It must be a message of truth. There must be a conquest. Please, please, please. That will interfere with my speech and that will interfere with your understanding also. I want to capture your heart and not don't want to receive your flags. Let your heart flag in unison with what I am saying, and I think I shall have finished my work. Therefore, I want you to go away with the thought that Asia has to conquer the West. Then the question that a friend asked yesterday, did I believe in one world? Of course I believe in one world. And how can I possibly do otherwise? Then I become an inheritor of the message of love that these great unconquerable teachers left for us. You can re-deliver that message now in this age of democracy, in the age of awakening of the poorest of the poor. You can re-deliver this message with the greatest emphasis. Then you will complete the conquest of the whole of the West, not through vengeance, because you have been exploited. And in the exploitation, of course, I want to include Africa. And I hope that when next you meet in India, you will, all the exploited nations of the earth will meet, if by that time there are any exploited nations of the earth. I'm so sanguine that if all of you put your hearts together, not merely your heads, but hearts together, and understand the secret of the messages of all these wise men of the East has left to us. And if we really become worthy of that great message, then you will easily understand that the conquest of the West will be completed, and that conquest will be loved by the West itself. West is today pining for wisdom. West today is despairing of multiplication of atom bombs, because a multiplication of atom bombs means utter destruction, not merely of the West, but it will be in a destruction of the world, as if the prophecy of the Bible is going to be fulfilled and there is to be a perfect deluge. Heaven forbid that there will be that deluge. And through man's wrong against himself, it is up to you to deliver the whole world, not merely Asia, but deliver the whole world from that wickedness, from that sin. That is the precious heritage your teacher, my teacher, that destroyed.